on 97.5 and 102.5 FM, DAB and online at pulse1.co.uk. It's all about rugby. This is the Robbie Hunter Pool Show on Pulse 1.
Kia ora and g'day rugby league fans, welcome to the RHP Show. Leon Price is in the house.
Hello, hello, hello everybody.
Luke Robinson's in the house.
Good evening, Rob.
Now, there's loads to cover this evening, including the weekend's upcoming matches. Looking back at last weekend's double header, trying to see whether or not Leon's got any legs left at 35 years of age, and he played two games in a weekend. I think he was promised only to play one game every 3 weeks, but he's doing it hard at the moment. He's a long lad. Loads come up, so we'll get straight into it. This is the Robbie Hunter Pool Show.
The Robbie Hunter Pool Show, news and views.
You know, before we start talking rugby league, let's just talk about your year, Robbo. It's come and it's gone. Your testimonial year has come and it's gone. How was it? How was the last do with JP? And
do you know what? Really good, obviously. It's been different. Every do I've had has been very different. So there's been the Beer Kellers, there's been Baz and Tez who bring a bit
jovial.
The
ladies' night was definitely different.
Yeah,
that was the most
night,
different I've ever experienced in my life.
Locker's obviously a bit going back old school, talking about me growing up with him. And then this one, yeah, a bit different because JP's like an inspirational talker now, isn't he? So it's had a different spin to
it. Did he do his speech?
He did his speech, yeah.
His full routine of it.
Yeah, I think he cut it down a little bit, to be fair, because we had loads of games in between and we're messing about and things. But no, it went really well, to be fair.
I'm giggling. No, JP's been there, done it. The most decorated Super League player of all time. Super League, that's not the most decorated player, but Super League player of all time. But I remember JP the youngin', do you know what I mean? And when you say motivational, inspirational, yeah, I do get that because he's been there and done that. But it's hard for me to take myself because I still remember that young lad.
Yeah, you know, that was trying to cut it.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Well, do you know what? I don't think it kept going down well because obviously Brian Carney, obviously my pal as well, came over. And anytime something kind of went wrong, it was like me and Laura for the first time we relaxed. I think it was because we wasn't selling any more dues. So it'd be like, This one don't go well. Who cares? We
had a Leon, he's going, this one doesn't go well. Who cares? We've got the money.
Yeah, well, basically.
It's already in bank account. Yeah, who cares?
Ching. The band pulled out. So we had got this old-timer singer coming on. No one heard him sing. We didn't know what was going on. Thought, whatever. We're just kind of chilled. But I don't think it went down well every time they said something to Brian. And I think I said, don't matter. It's my last do. They were like, all right, great. You just brought us to last do. You don't care about it. But do you know what? Being honest, the Huddersfield fans have been amazing. Mum and dad, mum and friends and family have been amazing, really. So
you would argue it's probably the fans of all West Yorkshire. That's who's been involved with your dues.
Yeah, to be fair, you know, but a lot of Halifax fans has been. Do you know my first two actually came? There were quite a few Wiganers, which were very unexpected.
Oh, well, it makes sense. Yeah, you did cut your teeth at Wigan.
Yeah, but it's really nice, you know, for them to travel all that way, you know, down the M62 and come to my first do and show the appreciation. So yeah, it's amazing for me. But do you know what? Me and my wife just literally like, get the wine out, just relax. Do you know what? We went to a Sunday, went out, watched my kid play for Sid Under Sevens, and we didn't know what to do afterwards because normally, we're like business partners, all we do is talk about that. We laid in the sun, had a couple of beers, and just chilled out. A really nice feeling, yeah. So,
well, there's an easy way of fixing that, and that is you and Laura becoming a part of Leon's testimonial crew as he starts to put an entourage together of about 400 businessmen. Isn't that what you got, Leon, on the plan?
So. That'd be nice.
Everyone takes their own event, 400 events over the course of 365 days. You've got to love that.
Ka-ching.
So it's been for me, it was a great experience, but nothing I'd ever want to do again.
Do you know what? Well, to be fair, do you know that after the ladies' night?
I'm talking about my testimony.
I thought you were about the ladies' night.
No,
you always bring that up.
Somebody
got in touch with us and actually asked, could we do one in Leeds? Like, genuinely, ladies said, could we do the same event in Leeds?
Were they at the event?
They were at the event and thought, this works.
Leon? Note that. Leon testimonial ladies' night in Leeds.
Send me notes.
At Allen Road. I think it holds about 800 people there. Let's go £50 a head. Boom. Just got to do the math, isn't it?
Easy
money. Pow, pow.
But you know what? It's been, I think for me, it's been quite therapeutic. It kind of, my Laura and my wife were a bit worried about when I retire. obviously the game's meant so much to me, and I've put my heart and soul into everything else that I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the testimonial were a little bit of a, it took my mind away from that. It kind of kept me busy.
God, did it ever?
But yeah, it kept me busy. But the same, in the same token, it kind of gave me an opportunity to, it was like a really, really, really long goodbye and farewell. So it was kind of, it's got, it gave me a year to get my head around it, say me thank yous, my appreciation to people. So it's been, yeah, it's been definitely therapeutic.
Well, there you go, Leon. There's something to look forward to. You want an exit strategy? Spend a year having no time to yourself.
That's okay. That's fine.
Literally what Robbo's done. Well, actually what Laura's done. So well, good luck, Carly. Jake Marmo got on the field finally over the Easter weekend. He was one of the stars of the ladies' night, the ladies' event. He is, you know, typical Aussie. Or actually not a typical Aussie because he's good looking.
Yeah, he's not a typical Aussie. He's not a full shilling, which you obviously experienced, didn't you, at 30s night. He's not a full shilling off the field. He's definitely, he's definitely different.
Let's call him a creative.
To be honest with you, Robbo, how many rugby players are a full shilling?
Yeah, to be fair, you know what? I was speaking to Richard Mathers the other day at Warrington because he was part of that, the welfare manager over there. He's moved upstairs and he's gone to sort of the commercial side of it. He just he can't deal with the welfare of rugby league players. He just says, you know, it is just so diverse and so different to probably every other walk of life. He just says, he can't. Sunday, we're a nightmare. Because obviously Saturday night, Sunday, then all of a sudden the news has come through what were going on Saturday nights. He had to deal with it. He said it was definitely rugby. He just said rugby league players are just different. And we are, aren't we?
We're not all there, Ned. Every single rugby player I know has got a little bit missing in their head somewhere.
It's a little bit broken.
I think you've got to be a little bit wrong in head just to play the game in first place.
So do you reckon that's a genetic thing, that's a nature thing, or it's a nurture thing? Culture of that type of unique environment makes you a little bit broken in the head.
I think the culture of it. I think the when you're playing, you get taught, don't you, play, don't show you hurt. Just make sure you're a man. If you get smashed, and then
get up.
Yeah, shut up, get up. Everything's tough in it, and then eventually
be hurt after the game.
Be hurt after the game, but how do you deal with that after 15, 20 years of it? Sometimes
but
it gets
right.
better. People. Sometimes it gets better people, doesn't it?
I also think it leads into your personal life as well. When you want a night out with lads, it is who can drink the most shots, who can stay out the longest, who
definitely
can ignore the
me.
Wife. Wife's ringing up phone a few days later. Who can ignore that phone call the longest? Everything. It is literally everything has to be about being the best. And I think it is that sort of fine line between being creative, a bit of creative, and then obviously being really good at something. Andrew John's the greatest player in the world. They're on the edge. And I just think...
There's so many examples of the sports greats walking that fine line between madness and greatness.
I'll guarantee you, if they actually did a study into rugby league, that you'd find that, I'd say, 95%
they're all broken.
Broken. Somewhere, shape, or form.
They're on a string.
Yeah, just somewhere, or form. There's something that's not right with them.
So university students, if you're out there, if you're doing a psychology degree, there's your next dissertation.
It'd be a good one.
There
that.
You go.
That'd be
come
awesome.
In, test players across the width and breadth. Let's look at that's we're kind of predominantly talking about Super League players here because that's where we've been exposed to. What if you're a part-time, championship player where you're a professional rugby player but you've got a normal job as well? Are you even more broken?
I don't know. I'd probably say they're probably a little bit more stable because
they've got two influences.
You've already got the real world set up. So let's say you're a joiner or whatever you are. That's your trade. So you've always got that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. So when you finish playing rugby, you can carry on doing your trade. Mm-hmm. Whereas the majority of rugby players, when they finish playing, if they're not coaching, I'd say 78% of players won't be sure what they're going
to
do.
Okay, well, quickly, just before we get to the break, Leon, how's the body feeling? Two games, one weekend.
I didn't play on the Monday, did I? I played Sunday and Friday.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
His body's sore. I've got to have an injection in my knee every time I play, so it swells up after a game.
How are the boys feeling then? I mean, they're a youngish team.
But it's tough, mate. It's tough because when you call all the low-knee players back, it basically strips us down to a bunch of kids. And playing in the championship, it's a physical league, and it's tough on the kids. It's really, really, really tough because they're getting hurt. They're playing against big men, and probably some of them have been put in, you know, a little earlier than what we'd like, but that's the situation we're
Needs must.
That's what the situation we're in.
That's right. To paint the picture properly, Leon's talking about the Bulls at this point in time have quite a few lonely players come to the club, and obviously because over the Easter weekend, the Super League clubs themselves are stretched with the squads that they've got playing two games, so getting players back fresh that have played at a good level, high level of our competition in the Championship is great benefit to them. So all those players go back to their home clubs, and it just leaves clubs like the Bulls a little bit skinny. So they have to reach then down into the under-19s and pull up players that, yeah, like you suggesting, may not be ready for that level of competition for that duration of the game. It's something to look at, though, anyway. Okay, when we come back from the break, we're going to go for a break now. When we come back from the break, we'll be having a look at some of the sport's hottest topics. So stick with us here on the RHP Show.
The opinions that matter from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. Super League, Championship, NRL, Challenge Cup. Whatever the story, we've got it covered. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
Welcome back to the RHP Show. We're live in the studio with Robbo and Leon. Boys, just before we went off to the break, we were talking about the doubleheader. Robbo, I can't remember if we were on air or we were talking off air about, you were talking about it has an impact directly on the reserve grade. There's impacts in the Super League competition, the lessening of the competitiveness, I guess you could argue, in weeks 3, 4, and 5. Super League clubs, your club, they've got to do it all again in about 5 weeks' time, yeah, at the back end of May. Tough ask. But something I want to have a chat about, because it kind of is quite relevant. We discussed a couple of weeks ago the increase in salary cap for 2018 and 19. I think it's gone up by 100,000. Both coaches, some players, former players, and experts have talked about, really, rather than putting the emphasis on the current first team playing squad and giving the ability to invest more money into that, some money and time and effort should be invested into the reserve grade to make sure that we keep a hold of the 19, 20, 21 year olds that progress out of the academy systems. Now, as it stands at this point in time, they either get picked up by the first team squad, sent off to a championship squad, for dual reg, or even in championship, some of those full-time squads are sending players to League One squads. But that has a detrimental effect in situations like the Easter weekend when they have to come back. If there was a reserve grade, if the monies, rather than spent on the first team, was invested into the reserve grade to develop that talent, do you think that they would have a better impact on periods like this in the Easter weekend or overall competition?
I think this is twofold. I think without a shadow of a doubt, we need an alliance set up. That's where you learn your
alliance,
trade.
A-team,
you know what I mean? The second team, whatever you call it when I were around. That, you know, you got the same players, the same calls, but not only that, some lads aren't ready to be playing championship yet. Like Leon said, you know, some lads at 18, 19 that just aren't good enough for Super League aren't yet good enough for championship, and I think we lose a lot of players. It's like, for me, for example, at this moment in time, I've got to decide which players we're going to keep for next year. Some of the boys are only 18-year-old, and I've got to make a snapshot decision and go, he isn't going to make it. And the problem for me is I've got to shift a certain number, because I've got a certain number coming up, and I actually think there's a bit of a loss, not a generation, but a lost cohort of players each and every year that actually could be a Jamie Peacock that could make it.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that, I also think the money should also go to the first team, because we are losing players to rugby union, we are losing players to NRL.
Mm-hmm.
We want to keep our best players. So for me, I know that it's not a magical pot that we can just pick out of, but we need to be increasing the salary cap within the first team, but also creating a second team as
There are some examples of what you're talking about, guys that actually have been able to survive, Alex Wormsley, Anthony England, Keegan Hurst, all players that found themselves maturing in the championship and coming to sort of the middle part of their careers and being able to then take the step up, because physically they've matured. Jamie Peacock, a great working example, someone who was ready for the scrap heap, someone who was going to be...
Chris Hill.
Chris Hill. Another working example. He'd go on to be an international player. There is some examples of how they have... But I think the argument that you're saying there is how many players actually we're losing.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying that going to Championship from under 16 level, playing there till you're 20, 21, then coming to the Super League isn't a pathway to become a really successful international like the likes of Chris Hill have. For me, there's also going to be players out there that we're losing because, you know, 17, 18, they just are not physically ready. You know, they're not men yet. They're going to be late bloomers. All of a sudden, we set the hopes and dreams away, which I'm going to do to a few players this year and go, that's it. And you know, sometimes they're not only lost to the professional game, they're lost to the game in general. A lot of them don't go back to their amateur clubs. Mm-hmm. They just see it as that's it, I'm, you know, that's me, don't put a fork in me, I'm done. So I just think, yes, there definitely needs to be a second team, especially in times during the Easter period where, look, not only the Super League's diluted by us having to play all those young lads and the squad players, but also then the Championship is, so the likes of Bradford, for example, where all the Leeds signings, loanees have gone back. All of a sudden, the Championships for 3 or 4 weeks is diluted. Mm-hmm. I just think the game in general is diluted. So to have a second team, hopefully they'll bolster that because we'll have 19, 20, 21-year-olds still within your system. But I also think we need to be pumping money into the first team as well to keep them out of Rugby Union and out of NRL.
Leon, what's the toughest thing with playing with guys that aren't there regularly? How does that impact on the team? Obviously, a lot of these guys that come down from the Super League squads, actually athletically, they're potentially more gifted than some of the guys that you have around you. But without having them there regularly and consistently over the duration of pre-season and during the season, must have some type of impact on the team.
Well, if you can imagine playing a game when somebody's not too sure of all the calls or they end up getting in your way, and then you do your video review on Monday and they're back at the club. So you can never review the game with them,
address
the problem until it comes to like Thursday or Friday when they come back to us. But by the time they come back, it's lost, it's gone. So how do you address the problems that are going on during the week? You can't because they're back at the club training.
Is it also a frustration for players that really the only people that really know what's going on are the clubs themselves that are discussing, negotiating, and then 1 week the players are in, 1 week they just disappeared?
Yeah, I look at it like this as well. In my opinion, if I'm self in those players' shoes, when I were younger, if I was playing for Fred and I wasn't quite ready yet, and they asked me to go to Leeds, well, now I don't really want to go to Leeds and play. I want to play for Bradford. That's my club. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I mean? Or if you're for Hull FC and they say, right, go on, go to Hull Care. Well, I don't want to go to Hull Care. I want to stay at Hull FC. That's my club. And I think that's a bit of an issue.
Mm-hmm. I also think it has a detrimental effect on the players that you're having within your squad. Because all of a sudden, you're wanting to play, say you're a winger, you're wanting to play, then Jermaine McGilvery gets dropped down to Oldham. You lose your spot for the week. That's not good on team morale when you've got a player who's trained all pre-season, trained with his mates, he's ready to play. And let's be fair, a lot of the lads in them Championship, it's a bit of extra brass in the pocket that they need. Probably help pay the mortgage and whatever else. So to all of a sudden they get dropped for 1 week, 2 weeks, oh, then you're now needed again.
Yeah.
It's really difficult for them to take. And also, I also think it's positional specific players apart. You know, I were a young lad that went to Castleford on loan. It's extremely difficult to go as a pivotal position into a new environment, new structures, new calls. It's a little bit easier, for example, being a winger. But when you're an halfback, it's extremely difficult.
Mostly linesman.
Yeah, mostly linesman. What happens when you're a young half who's good for 19s, but it's probably just not ready really for Super League, but then you're a Championship, you go to a Championship club that, like Leon says, you're only there for one day. You do the run through, you play, you're back again.
And that must be so frustrating as the player themselves to be able to create some continuity, that synergy that you need to work, you know, as you're saying, from a pivotal point of view. It's an interesting argument because I think everybody realises the value in having a reserve grade, but whether or not the resources are there. And then that's the counter argument. Resources are going to be made available for increasing the salary cap.
And this is the problem as well, is, you know, they get a hard time to the RFL. Mm-hmm. It's not the RFL that make these decisions always.
That's right.
It's the clubs. And as you'll know, Robbie, because you've been part of that process. And now
it's a vote.
It's a vote.
The RFL are one vote in that entire vote.
And they get loads of stick to the RFL. But it's not always just them. The problem for us is there's a certain amount of clubs within the Super League structure that want reserves and prepared to pay for one. I mean, it's a joke at the moment. I was speaking to the Wigan reserve coach, Matty Pete. He says, 1 week they're on, then they're off for 2 weeks. Then they're on for 2 weeks, they're off for three. So because there isn't enough teams to play. And then Hull KR have just recently, that they've got a merger of an academy, but some of them players have gone on loan to Wigan's under second team. Not to the first team, they've gone on loan to the second team because they're not getting games. It's just a farce. The whole system is a farce. I'm going to fall further and further behind the NRL and rugby union until that. I think this is the key thing within our game, is the youth structure, the 21s, and getting everyone on board together.
Now, these increases, £100,000, I think over the next couple of years, £100,000 each year. Is that really enough? If you're going to compete against, I think rugby union was at, and last time I looked, was at $3.3 million. Just the NRL is just short of £4 million. Is £100,000 extra going to be enough to secure?
What will it be then, 1.7?
I think it goes for 1.8. 1.9
to 2.
Yeah.
Over the next 3 years?
1.8 is at next 2 years, yeah. Right, 1.8 now, 1.9.
Well, in all fairness, it's a start, isn't it? Like, finally, something's happened. We've been calling it for time.
Mm-hmm.
Is it enough? Probably not, no. But we play RL, the rugby league. You know what it's like, don't you? We all know. We definitely needs to increase.
I mean, look, I'm going to take a break here. So hold that thought, I'm Robbie. When we come back from the break, we're going to continue this conversation about what we really need to do to stop that player drain coming out of the sport. So stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
The opinions that matter from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. The latest news and the opinions that matter from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. We just left off the last segment just talking about the increase in the salary cap for 2018 and 19 respectively. Look, one of the things that we're saying that if it's only an increase of £100,000, is that really going to make an impact on whether or not players are going to be out, they're going to be able to retain the talent that we've got? But actually, when we consider it, if you glue that together with the income that the centrally based contracts could also offer those players, we actually are talking about, we can be talking about a significant amount of money. So if you've got the marquee player rule, plus, which can be anything, plus they're centrally contracted, and then an increase of 100,000, it's starting to look a little bit different. A salary cap, really, for what your team is actually really worth, it could go into two point whatever million.
Another point, I know I don't want to go off piece. Who decides who's centrally funded then?
England.
Because Warrington have two already.
I think we have a vote.
Well, that makes a big difference though, doesn't it? You know, all of a sudden when you look at our squad at the moment, you think, fair enough, we had Leroy Cudjoe, Jermaine McGovern, that makes an impact on us.
Yeah.
But if we don't have anyone, and Wigan have a couple, Warrington have a couple.
Well, who have Warrington?
They've got Ben Kerry and Darrell Clark already, which already makes a difference to their salary, doesn't it? So all of a sudden, they've got a massive part of their wage exempt. So all of a sudden, they're on a different, which I don't mind, and I think central funding is a really good idea. My only argument is, what happens if you have four from one team and zero from Wakefield or zero from Huddersfield?
I think there'll be a limitation on, I'm not sure about this actually. It's something for us to have a look into. Jake, just note that, mate, we need to find out what's the requirements for centrally funded players, how many players a team can have, is there limitations on it, etc.
Basically, get some work done, Jake.
Yeah, stop just Facebooking get your, just get your some work done now. Mate. Look at him, he's gone, bro. We love you, Jakey. But, I mean, you're right, and that's what we're talking about. Actually, the salary cap for those players could be quite extensive.
Just tell me that fact, what you just said about what you were speaking to Brian Carney about.
Yeah, I can't,
a good point.
Yeah, I can't remember the actual. Do you know, when rugby league players and organisations, and well, not the rugby league clubs themselves, but players and everyone else is going on about inflating the salary cap. Mm-hmm. It isn't just a, let's give us more, blah, blah, blah. Brian Carney told me a really interesting fact. He said that if Super League wages had gone up just purely with inflation, nothing else but just inflation since 2000, our salary cap had been 4 point odd million just by inflation alone. That must
if
be
you
the
followed
difference.
The same percentages, yeah.
If you just followed inflation and nothing else, what it costs for a price of bread, and what you could buy your house
petrol,
everything else, if you just followed that rule alone, our salary cap would now be at 4 point odd, as opposed to the 1.8.
Yeah.
1.8. It was somewhat ridiculous. Now, I know it looks daft, but you've got to remember, I mean, I know Jamie Peacock sat in front of Nigel Wood and said, when I were at Bradford in 2011, I would have more money than what I am on now for bonuses and everything else. So you say, how can it be not going up when everything else in life is going up? Now, I'm not saying, look, and I know there's a lot of diehards out there that straight away go, you're really well played, you're doing something amazing for your job, which I totally, totally get, and I really appreciate the life it's given me and everything else. But for us to compete with other sports where their salary cap's been going up with inflation, if not beyond it, how come ours hasn't?
I think it's a massive point.
There wasn't a clear. I mean, there were seven clubs that voted for, and there were five that voted against. And the reality it hasn't gone up is because there were more than five that voted against the last time, and the time before that it came up, well, whenever it was. The salary cap issue has been there for a long time. The talent has been draining for a number of years. Only now they realise actually this is a real, real issue for the quality of what we're delivering, the product that we're delivering. So that's why they've had to move with the times. And they're doing that via a number of different types of mechanisms. Marquee players, centrally funded contracted players, and now there's a salary cap increase.
So what is it? You'll know more than us, obviously. You're sat, but you've been behind the scenes, mate. Is it because as our attendance has all of a sudden dropped, you know, throughout the Super League, as attendance has gone down, our viewing figures gone down, as TV money gone down, because if inflation goes up, surely everything goes with it. So if a bloke that pays, used to pay £8 down at Shear, he now pays £12 down at Shear. Surely it's all relative. That's what I can't get my head around. Unless we've just had a massive decline in people watching the game, both at TV and through the terraces, where's it going?
Okay, so when you compare the Rugby League central distribution funding, basically what we get from Sky TV and other networks, probably that's in comparison to our whatever we consider our competitors, i.e. Rugby Union, we get a lot less than they do. NRL, a lot less than they do. There's no... Obviously, we know we're not even anywhere in the ballpark when it comes to football. So that's a big issue, making sure that the value of the sport, the viewing figures actually haven't been that bigger affected. Now, attendance records on average per game is actually lower, but there's more people attended games because there's, I think, what, five extra games per season. So there's actually more people attending. It's how they're sweating them as assets. So people not necessarily able to go to as many games, but there's more games. I think the reality is really comes down to how they've packaged up the TV deal. And we're talking about this last week. The England Samoa game is going to go on live streaming. And that is a first for rugby league. It is a first. It's a first sort of indication that are breaking the communication platforms into different pieces, because that's what other sports do. You know, you'll watch a little bit of Premier League on ITV, and then you watch it on Sky Sports, and they're broken up into bits and pieces all across the world. And I think that's the approach that needs to come when it comes to the next discussion regarding where and how the product is viewed. And if we think of it like that, and at the end of the day, it is a service, it is a product. And that's what we needed. To get that up, we need to get those central distribution fundings up where that is, because it's got to come from the broadcasters, a lot more money from the broadcasters, sponsors, etc. That whole arc has to head north. That means that more money will come to the clubs. Now, because that money's not there, that's why the salary cap has stayed at that level, is because it's allowed all the clubs to compete on a level pegging, because not every club has the Simon Morans of this world that actually have the excess income to bridge the gap or even to invest into the heavy marketing machines that they're with, with the big rebrand and et cetera that they did. And not everyone, not all things are equal. Some stadiums have an average of, Leeds, for example, I think they average 17,500 people, whereas you've got the Salfords of this of this world that average 4,000, 5,000 people. That means that there's a massive difference between the haves and the have-nots.
I understand the salary cap. I understand why it's put in place and why it works, and there's less fortunate clubs than others. My argument is, how come inflation's gone up and nothing else has? And I know you've said all that. I just think...
Well, because the money's not there.
So we're not selling the game enough then.
We're bowing down to the lowest common denominator, and the impact that that has is it lessens the quality of the product on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
And the players get drained. They go to where the opportunity arises for them. And that's just rugby union.
What we're basically saying is that the game now is in a position where most of its best players, most attractive players, can't play in Super League because we can't afford to keep all of them.
Now what we're doing is we're implementing...
As we stand at the moment, it is.
No, that's not true, because that's why you've got the marquee player signings. You've got
Some Tompkins back.
So there's an example, and the centrally funded contracted players. These sort of mechanisms are now being put in place while still trying to make it manageable for those clubs that aren't on those bigger budgets.
But the point, I know we're reacting maybe a little bit late as well, but a lot too late. But like Robbo's saying, that then needs to stick to it with inflation. Can't you keep it at that for this year and keep it the same for 10 years?
To be honest, you could argue it needs to not stick with inflation. It needs to stick with the competitors.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think that's the point.
That's where we're going. That's where we're all going.
If we stuck with inflation, then we would be ahead of our competitors. I think that's a reality.
At the end of the day, everybody wants to watch a Wigan. Everyone wants some. When Wigan were winning 90s, it was amazing. Everybody supported Wigan. They were full-time, everybody were part-time. Mm-hmm. But we were a dynasty. You grew up right watching Martin Fyre, Andy Farrell, Dean Bell, all legend players. But, you know, it was a little
Henry Paul, Robbo grew up loving him.
It was a little bit unfair because they were like massively paid and full-time players, and everybody else were kind of part-time. But it was a dynasty, and Wigan are remembered and are all around the world. You speak to anybody, they know Wigan are.
They know the brand, don't they?
They know the brand because it were a dynasty.
It was a global brand, though.
And even though we've had a salary cap for 20 years, we've only had four teams that have ever won Super League: Bradford, mm-hmm. Saints, Wigan, and Leeds. Sorry.
The one that's wanted the most.
I forgot about that. Really bad for that.
I think that's a psychological block, though.
It's a swear word in my house.
It's sort of like, what's it, from Harry Potter. Never mention him.
So it's okay talking about the salary cap and saying, yeah, you know, it's going to even itself out. Four teams have won it in 20 years. There you go.
So it doesn't even out. That's what your argument is.
Yeah.
Is that it's the lowest common denominator, but it's not evened out anyway.
No.
It's been counterproductive. Okay, we're going to go a break now. When we come back, we spent the whole segment talking about that. I love that, actually. In depth. Okay, when we come back, we'll have a look at this weekend's upcoming games, including their Challenge Cup rounds and some of the Super League games, all that and more after the break. So stick with us right here on the RHP Show.
The opinions that matter from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
All right, welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with Luke Robinson and Leon Price. I mentioned Luke first that time. Leon, got to have a word to the producer here. So let's talk about Friday afternoon, what we considered was the top match of the round. The biggest local derby in rugby league, arguably, and that is St. Helens versus Wigan. St. Helens travelled to Wigan. 12 o'clock kickoff it was. Opening 9 minutes of the game, Kyle Amor does just a pretty decent shot on Liam Marshall, which hits the ball, but it rides up and ends up taking his head off. He gets sent off. Come on, let's discuss that. 9 minutes into the biggest derby, Ben Thaler sends off Kyle Amor.
This, in my opinion, is a repercussion of nobody sending off Ben Westwood last week. You know, when Ben Westwood when he played against Leeds.
Liam Sutcliffe
knocked him out. They didn't get sent off, blah, blah, blah. And there were big blow-ups about
big
it.
Big ho-ha going on. So social media
week,
on fire.
Yeah, so this week, I think we're seeing the repercussion of that that incident. I've got to send him off.
Think Steve Ganson, because he's obviously controlled, referee's controller, he's got them all in a room and say, "I want you to be strong." I think they're walking around the room, snap. I think that's definitely been the message sent out there
because if, after watching the replay of the tackle, we all know it's not a sending off.
No,
and you've spoiled the biggest derby that we're all.
It was a high tackle. Don't give him because he rode up.
Give him
but his initial contact, smack, flush on the ball.
If you're not sure, we have got technology in rugby league. If you're not too sure you've seen it, and you just want to check, it might take you 30 seconds. Just go up to big man up in box and say, "Can you just check that tackle? I think he's hit him round head, but can you just check to see if it's made contact with his head first or if he's made contact with the ball first?" It takes 30 seconds. He can come back down and say, "He hits the ball first, it's unintentional, we'll give him a yellow card, it's sufficient." And it's game back on, it's a good game to watch. But
Robert, did you get to see it?
I caught the highlights of the game, I were in my caravan.
Not the game, but the
I watched that,
yeah.
I were in my caravan at the time, so just chilling out with my kids. And one day off, because obviously we played Wednesday night. But I just don't know if it's been a bit of a rush of a blood, rush of blood from him.
I reckon it is, because what Leon the picture Leon paints about that local derby, the intensity, it was a rammed stadium. You've been able to cut the atmosphere with a knife, and I just reckon he's just got caught up in it. But to be honest, we need them to be better.
Yes, and he's been dropped this week.
He already reffed us first, though, and made a really bad call. I'm not gonna lie.
But
I also think it's a massive thing in the game. The best referees, you don't hear them, you don't see them. Like the kind of
the game goes on without them,
and any little incident, it does get pulled up. But the less you can hear and see of a referee, usually the better the game,
and the more entertaining it is for me as a fan. Yeah. I watch those games, and I don't want the letter of the law.
No,
I want common sense to prevail.
We don't want letter of the law, do we? We don't. We want a bit of biff. We want a little bit of biff. We want it to be a little bit tasty. That's why we play rugby league. All the players want that. We want it to be a bit tasty.
Well, that's why I view rugby league.
That's why I watch it. Same with shoulder barge and punching and stuff in NRL. I mean, you can't even throw a punch in NRL now. You get 10 games. It's part of tradition. Look at
18 games, you lose your whole season.
Look at ice hockey. Ice hockey can have a little bit of a dust up. It's just part of their ritual. That's how they do it.
But they're on ice, so there's no real.
You've seen them fights, Robert.
Give up five minutes in one of those brawls, mate.
I've never admitted to being a fighter.
I wouldn't be in one of them fights, mate.
I'll show you.
Big mates, I didn't need a fight.
I'll give you a documentary to watch and I'll show you there's proper fights on there.
I know there are proper fights, but the sliding around on ice, like all power comes from the ground upwards.
Mate,
so that's where I think they can get away with it a little bit more. I mean, like our mate Stu Fielding, when he got chopped on the jaw by Mason, it was just...
Don't talk about that, Robbie. Don't talk about it. He hates talking about
mate,
that.
Mate, if he's listening now, he will literally be going nuts.
Nuts in his car.
He'll crash his car.
He's just snapped the steering wheel.
Okay, well, let's move on to what happened the night before. Houston, it's spelt Houston, but you see him hit Bentham.
Yep, seen it.
Clean out.
Is he up for it?
Well, he is. Yeah, I think it's on because you know how they've been so. You can't touch them. You can't breathe on them. You can't look at them wrong. And just on that note, news has just come in that Danny Brough has just been given a game.
For abusive behaviour
towards a referee.
Yeah, I've heard.
Oh, it's all on fire today. But do you think, Leon, do you see that on Thursday night?
I've seen the replay of it.
No, but Robert, did you see it?
I was actually commentating for another radio, and I actually didn't even see it. Me and Dave Woods didn't even see it.
Oh, you're watching the break?
We were just kind of commentating through the game, and all of a sudden, after the game, we're like, so Houston supposedly done something wrong. We're like, didn't even see it.
Well, Leon, do you think he's going to cop something for that? I think he will do.
I'm not sure if it's intentional. He'll get a long time.
When you look at him, he's tracking Stefan Rashford, who makes the break. He's looking at Stefan the whole way, and when Stefan makes the break, he increases its speed. Sadly for Phil Bentham, he increases his speed right into his line of running as well. Now, I don't think it's intentional. I think right at the point, he then realizes he's in front. Now, there's two things, though. Now, if you're walking in a shopping center and a child runs in front of you, what do? You pull up, don't you? Your just natural instinct is to pull up. Yes. The difference between this and what Houston does, he cleans out. You, I mean, it's a protection thing. You're going to clean out rather than, but I think sometimes you can pull up as you would if it was a little kid. You'll pull your hands up and your chest will come back and you'll slam on the brakes. But if a referee stops me from making a tackle, I'm going to be annoyed. Do you know what I mean?
Did it look like you annoyed, or did it look like he was actually playing for a penalty?
No, because you know, he wasn't playing for a penalty.
Right. Right, he was never going to get a penalty.
I don't mean a penalty. I mean just a bit like, oh, look, I'm being obstructed, I can't get.
No, it wasn't one of them. It was one of them where, like, you see, you go, ooh, ooh, you know what I mean? You're not right sure if he meant it or not. You know,
oh, man, Phil Bantham got whiplash and everything. His head nearly hit the back of his backside. It went back that far, so. It'd be interesting. I'm interested to see, because there was no intention. There's been some bad ones. Hawks a couple of years ago was pretty bad. You know, he could have pulled up long before he ran into the referee.
But against Huddersfield.
Yeah.
He actually pulled him around. That way he just like whizzed him around by his shirt collar.
Just quickly, Leon, he wasn't your old boss back then, but he's boss of St. Helens now. He's headed down under, looking for a new coach.
Who's that? Mike Rush.
Mike Rush, yeah, that's it. Links to the job include David Fairley, David Turner, Jason Taylor, Jason Demetriou, who, you know, number two to the North Queensland Cowboys. Also got Brad. I'd say Jeff Tuvey has been linked with every job in rugby league.
It's a big club, it's saying, so they'll do it properly.
But just the fact that he's going down under, does that suggest that they're going to poop? Yeah. Choose an Aussie from.
Yeah, I think he'll be. I think he'll have close links with Daniel Anderson. I think he'll be guiding them in which direction to choose from. I think.
What about Ando?
Daniel.
What about him? In him back on there.
Why would he come back? Why would you spoil a dynasty?
Money.
I don't think he'd come back. I think he's already the best coach that clubs ever had. He's got nothing else to prove there.
Just
stay above everybody else. You're a legend. Don't come back.
He's obviously on a good thing, or else he'd still be coaching, wouldn't he?
Yeah, do you know, just going back to Kieran, I think everyone forgets sometimes Darryl Powell was sacked from Leeds.
Said this last week.
Did you?
We had that discussion.
Do you know what? It does, doesn't it? And you think, surely unlike
Daryl Shelford, can you really see... Sorry, Powell. I did that last week as well. There's a blast from the past. Unlike Darryl Powell, could you really see... Kieran going back into the championship to cut his teeth like Daryl did?
We went to rugby union. He didn't even go to championship. He went rugby union first and then went to championship, didn't he?
Okay, we're getting to the back end of the show right now. Fifth round of the Challenge Cup this weekend. I only got 30 seconds. How's that shaping up?
We're out of the competition.
Bulls
so.
Are out of the competition, so Leon's loving that.
I'm not loving it, but we've got hills on Saturday morning.
Downhill's always the best.
West winter on 12:30 on Sunday.
All right, well, good luck with that. All right, good luck. Thank you very much for being on the show, boys. It's a pleasure as always. Covered loads tonight. Good to have you back, Robbo. Now that you're not gallivanting, pretending to be a coach in the Super League. We'll be back this time next week, so stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show. Thanks for being with us.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1. Wednesday evening from 6:00.